Welcome to Federal Insights DoD Cloud, sponsored by Microsoft. Now, here's your host, Jared Serbu.
I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us on this week's Federal Insights. And on our final edition of this four-part series focusing on cloud computing in DoD, we're glad to welcome Rear Admiral Donnell Barrett, the Chief Information Officer for the Navy. That service, as we reported recently, is undergoing some significant changes in the way it's handling the migration of its IT systems to commercial cloud environments. A memo Barrett's office issued in December reorients the cloud brokerage role between government and industry, a role that until now has been played exclusively by the Services Program Executive Office for Enterprise Information Systems. There will now be 8 brokers throughout the Navy. Overarching governance issues will be handled by Barrett's office, PEOEIS, and from a security perspective by the Navy's Fleet Cyber Command. Admiral Barrett spoke with me by phone from her office at the Pentagon about the reasons for the changes.
So we wanted to have a limited number of cloud brokers, if you will, to help us manage throughout our enterprise cloud contracts with some very specific guidance on how to standardize those contracts and the language in those contracts about our operational requirements so that we have a consistently applied environment from which we can operate and command and control our information that will be in the commercial cloud. So we didn't want everybody willy-nilly going off, you know, getting their own cloud contracts, and then we were left with sort of a dog's breakfast, if you will, of how to manage that information and the services that they have and all that. So we wanted to provide a little structure. So to that end, we've done a couple things. One of the things that we've done is developed a cloud requirements document that speaks to, you know, how we will do C2 of the cloud, and I'll talk to that a little bit later. But it also talks to, you know, how we'll manage the services there, particularly commands like Fleet Cyber Command, who has a responsibility from a network operations and a cyber defensive perspective to protect our information and manage our information, which will be out in the cloud now, the commercial cloud. So there will be an overarching cloud contract, an enterprise cloud contract, if you will, PEOEIS is working right now and going to manage for us. And all these cloud brokers should first have their users or operators who are looking for cloud services use that enterprise cloud contract first with the standard offerings that it has, the cloud service offerings that each of the vendors provide. And so if they have special operational needs beyond that, that's when they would go and put, you know, in an addendum to that contract or an additional contract or additional CLINs on a contract where they would say, and I also need these additional services because of the unique nature of my data or something else that I need to do, or maybe potentially some other services that the cloud provider offers that aren't part of the standard contract, if you will, or the standard enterprise contract. So in that construct, we have us up at the OpNav level, the ESH1 level, we're the enterprise cloud broker. And so we help identify those and develop those requirements, the policies, identify the resources that will be used to execute those. We develop metrics and how the reporting will work for the cloud brokers. And then we delegate our execution of sort of the day-to-day management of those functions in execution to the executive agent, which is Program Executive Office for Enterprise Information Systems, PEOEIS. So PEOEIS would do things like they would do delivery of an enterprise commercial cloud contract itself, being an acquisition organization. They would follow all the policy and governance and rules. They would enforce that with those cloud brokers that we've identified. They would onboard kind of any new enterprise commercial cloud services that the cloud vendors provide, you know, or come along after the contract. They would, we anticipate the cloud vendors will continue to add great capability that we're going to want to leverage either from a cybersecurity perspective or from a data analytics perspective. And so we're going to want to leverage those new tools as they come aboard. So part of the thing that the executive agent PEOEIS would do is help us get those capabilities on board where people could, on that enterprise contract where people could select them. They would do things like also arrange for training because it's going to be really important that not just training for the people who are managing the contract itself, but for the application owners. So how to migrate their apps, get them cloud ready, how to secure them in the cloud because, you know, a lot of the intrusions we've seen so far are not with the cloud provider's infrastructure itself. It's with the improperly configured third-party application that's in that portion of the cloud. So we want to make sure our application owners are well trained in how to manage their cloud efforts or applications in the cloud.
So from everything you just said, it's actually slightly a decentralization of where the Navy was as of a couple months ago, because up until this point, PEO EIS had been the sole cloud broker for the entire Navy. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why the Navy decided that was not the best approach, and what a little bit more about what the seams are going to be between the responsibilities of EIS and the SysComs and other field level, or I guess S2 brokers.
Yeah, so it might appear at first blush that it's decentralized and uncoordinated, but it's actually very centralized in that the standardization for all the things like the cloud hosting approach and the common standards and how we will command and control the cloud and how we will do common RMF practices and inheritance for the accreditation pieces and how we'll do portfolio management and some of those kind of things, those are actually all going to be set as standards for everybody to comply with the same way. So there is a lot of centralization of the policy and how we will expect everybody to operate in this environment. The decentralization approach is just because each of these kind of areas, the domains, they each have unique understanding of their databases, their information, their applications. So NAVC, NAVAIR, NAVSUP, NAVFAC, Military Seal of Command, Strategic Systems Programs Command, those are the folks that would be the cloud brokers, and they have a unique understanding of their environments. So they're the ones who would say, yes, I'm good to go on the enterprise contract. I don't need anything additional. Or, yeah, I need to be on the enterprise contract, but I also need this extra thing for this user group that I have or the operators that I have here that have a unique requirement. So that's where we're trying to give the flexibility to those several echelon two commands to have that. Now, if it's not you that's a cloud broker, you can go to any one of those other cloud brokers to get your services if you're not identified as one. But we picked sort of the big ones that have the majority of the applications in the Navy.
Yeah, and that sort of mission-specific focus totally makes sense to me. But let me just raise one concern that comes to mind, and then you can tell me why it's why it's unfounded. And the way I think about this is, look, the Navy and the Marine Corps really over the last 20 years, via NMCI, via data center consolidation, you guys have really done a lot more than the other MILDEPs, I think it's fair to say, at getting the whole organization to behave like an enterprise from an IT standpoint. So it seems to me like, and this is a balancing act, right? But one of the risks here might be that if this isn't handled right, you lose some of the goodness in that. The more the SysComs have the authority to do their own thing, the more this enterprise starts to fracture and to fragment around the edges. So, I mean, is everything I just said a reasonable way to look at things?
Well, I think it would be if we didn't have some controls in place. So for one thing, for example, if you are going to deviate off the enterprise contract, you have to come and tell us why you're going to do that first, and we have to agree with that. You know what I mean? So it's not just like you can just deviate at will, right? You have to show us why the enterprise contract doesn't meet your requirements. You know, because frankly, there may be something that they identify that they need that everybody else would need on that enterprise contract too. In which case, we could then secure that offering through PEOAS on the enterprise contract for everyone. So I think that there could be a concern that that might happen, but I think some of the controls we have in place for when people want to deviate off an enterprise contract and the requirement for them to articulate why that's why that's needed will help us kind of keep that in line. So people, I think, will find that the enterprise contract will have probably 95% of what they need. I wouldn't imagine there's too much that they would need that would be outside of that.
Hmm. To the extent the SysComs and the other brokers do go out and set up their own vehicles, are they mainly just going to be responsible for their own functional areas, or do they start to specialize maybe in ways that then become available to the broader Navy? Like, I'm making this up, but let's say NAVAIR turns out to be really good at contracting for machine learning platform as a service type capabilities. Do they then become like a center of excellence across the Navy for a focus area like that?
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely could, and that's actually a great idea, frankly. We may steal that from you. It's a great way to look at it, and dependent upon the expertise in those areas, they may have a specialization that they would sort of be the leader in, and we would want to leverage that because anybody can go to any of these cloud brokers to get the services that they want if the enterprise contract didn't fulfill their requirements, right? So they could go to any of them that they want. So even if, for example, you were at NAVC in the future and NAVAIR was an expert in, like you said, machine learning, and your project was related to machine learning, you could actually work that contract through them. You know what I mean? So we think there's going to be a lot of flexibility to do that. But again, what I would say is I think the additional contracting that they would do would be less going out and buying new contracts as opposed to helping their application owners to work within and live within the enterprise contract and how to migrate their apps and how to keep them secure and how the metrics are, sort of more the maintenance and sustainment of their application once it's in that environment.
Hmm. One thing, we should step back just a little bit and talk about the cloud-first policy, because a lot that we're talking about right now is predicated on that. Broadly, how do you see the policy, and to what extent are there exceptions? I mean, it's cloud-first except for or unless. What
right.
are the things that don't make sense as of now to move to a commercial cloud?
So for now, I mean, our memo came out under the last deputy chief information officer for the Navy, Ms. Haith, back in February of 17. And, you know, the policy basically said, hey, cloud-first strategy, you know, move things to the maximum extent possible, and that's up to secret, right? And so what we're looking at is, you know, the advantages that we can have in the cloud that we won't necessarily be able to get, you know, having stovepipe applications. And the advantages of being able to use data in ways that we don't today by having data analytics run on large portions of our information that could then be combined in web services that we don't do it that way today. But we see a lot of power and a lot of advantage from an operational perspective to do that. So I think that the way that the cloud first policy is it's going to be a do no harm. So there may be information that we say, okay, you know what, even though I could move it to the cloud, I don't have a good track record on commercial cloud yet. I mean, they haven't been out there for 30 years doing this where they've got an impeccable track record of getting it right. You know, they've only been at this a couple years. So, you know, we have a little bit of deliberateness that we're doing in moving what we're moving to the cloud. So maybe we don't move nuclear command and control data, for example, or ballistic missile defense data. Maybe there's certain things we say, okay, let's see how it goes with these other applications and these other databases first, and everything goes well. We have the confidence. We know how to C2 or command and control our information in the cloud. We know how to do incident response or hunting of an adversary or whatever those functions are that we need to do from a network operations or defensive cyber operations perspective. Once we have the confidence in that, then we may move those last few sensitive applications that we were concerned with. Or we may never move some of those to the commercial cloud. They may go to a military cloud, the military cloud provided by DISA, for example. So, again, those decisions will be made based on the nature of the data and the application owner, the information owner, and the mission. But our intent is to move most of what the Navy has to a commercial cloud environment.
And is there an explicit preference for commercial vice some kind of on-prem solution like a MilCloud or something?
Well, I think the advantages we can get in the commercial cloud, I personally believe that the rate at which capability will be added, because it's driven by a much larger market than DoD, right? The rate that capability will be added and cybersecurity enhancements will be added will probably exceed what we could do in the military. That's not to say that the DISA's MilCloud is going to be insufficient to meet needs. I just don't know if it would be the best platform in the future as capabilities are rapidly added in the commercial cloud. I'm not sure they can be rapidly added in the same with the same agility in the military cloud. Mm-hmm. If they are, okay, that's great. But again, not a lot of track record either with the military cloud or with the commercial cloud to know what that rate is, but that's just what I suspect.
Yeah, and as you suggest, it's probably, correct me if I'm wrong, too early to know exactly what the ratio of things that end up in the commercial cloud is going to be. But let's just say at some point it's probably going to be more than half, something like that. Whatever it is, the implication of really everything we're talking about is that NMCI probably looks a lot different 10 or 15 years from now than it does today. It's probably a lot more focused on kind of stitching together a whole bunch of these cloud services and making sure that data is available to everybody who needs it, kind of wherever they are, and a lot less on the kind of infrastructure that you need today to host and process data. Is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, the more we look to industry to buy services as and not pay for infrastructure, you know, to buy services and to have everything in an environment, a virtualized environment, then that it will change, I think, the footprint of what we know NMCI or NGEN to be in the future. So as you get to a true web service environment where you are decoupling data an application and presentation from the hardware, right? And you're just using shared infrastructure to do that. And then you can tap into authoritative databases with your web services to combine those data however you need them in whatever cloud they're in. Then you don't need, you know, lots of boxes to do that anymore, right? Like we have today, application servers and things like that that are unique to a specific application. We'll get away from that kind of infrastructure. We'll still always need infrastructure for end-user devices, whether those are a mobile device or a chip in your head. Who knows what it'll be in the future, right? It may not be the computer on your desk, right? But whatever that end-user device, there'll still need to be some sort of provider of that infrastructure for network operations to be able to access the information. But the way the information is then served up to you will be from a different infrastructure than we know today, I think.
Rear Admiral Danielle Barrett is the Deputy Department of the Navy Chief Information Officer. She handles CIO matters for the Navy side of the Dawn. We'll come back and talk more about the Navy's current thinking about cloud computing and how to speed up its adoption of commercial cloud after a short break. This is Federal Insights on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serviv.
Here's Lee Madden, General Manager, U.S. Department of Defense at Microsoft.
Today, events move faster than ever. Our military forces need the edge only technology can deliver. Microsoft Azure is the U.S. government-exclusive cloud built for mission speed. Microsoft brings powerful capabilities like analytics and AI to help the DoD turn data into insights and take immediate action. Microsoft data centers provide world-class security for the military's vital resources from the Pentagon to the tactical edge.
Visit azure.com/missioncloud.
Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is Federal Insights as we get back to our conversation with Rear Admiral Danielle Barrett, the Navy's Chief Information Officer. We've been talking about the Navy's recent decision to defuse some of its cloud brokerage responsibilities throughout the service. And Admiral, just to zoom out just a little bit on everything we've been talking about so far, the discussion around moving to cloud and even especially commercial cloud has been, let's say, in progress for many years now. From your perspective, just a Navy perspective, what have been the main barriers and what barriers really still exist at this point that have kept you from moving as much as you might have otherwise moved by now to a commercially hosted environment?
Well, I think two things. I think one thing that industry has done recently, and by recently I mean in the last 3 years, is really put an emphasis on making sure it meets U.S. government requirements, not just DoD, but U.S. government requirements for accreditation and certification of their cloud environment, both the infrastructure and the software as a service. So they've done a lot of really great work, a lot of companies have, to get their infrastructures and their software and their environments approved for, in accordance with risk management framework and the security requirements that the government has set out in FedRAMP and those kind of things. So I think that's one change. The second piece of why we haven't moved faster, I think, is that we have a lot of applications that aren't cloud ready. I mean, aren't even cloud ready to go into any cloud environment, mill cloud or commercial cloud. And so it's going to take time and development effort to get those to be ready in that environment. And we would like to see them go to sort of that web service environment I was talking to you about in the future and not pave a cow path with, you know, taking an old legacy application, spending a lot of money to just tweak it and make it cloud ready and stick it out there, but then you're still not getting the benefits of, a true web service environment. Now, we would like to see them modernize that way, but again, that may be a bridge too far for them right now, you know, in the next 2 years, if you will. But that's where they need to get to. In the interim, we have to look at, okay, which environments, which applications, which data make sense to move to the cloud from an investment perspective to do that now, or from an operational perspective in that, I need their information out in the cloud because of the data analytics I can get on it that I can't get, you know, having it being a stovepipe application on NMCI now, for example. So some of those decisions are based on, you know, operational requirements. Some are based on, you know, what makes sense fiscally, and then, you know, what can we retool or get to the cloud, get cloud ready, if you will, in the time frame that we're looking in.
On the applications point, I mean, there are some other parts of DoD that have taken a more, I almost said heavy-handed, but that's more pejorative than I really mean, but that have been prescriptive about it, let's just say that have said things like, okay, the data centers are closing, you need to find another place to keep your stuff, or that application is going away. Transcom, Army are ones that come to mind as organizations that have done some variation on that. Is the Navy at a point where you need to start thinking about approaching things in a more prescriptive way rather than letting people modernize their applications or decide if they want them on more or less their own timetable?
I believe that, yes. I think that we do need to be a little more prescriptive in our development environment and in our how we field capability. So, for example, the compile to combat in 24 hours effort that we're piloting now for the afloat environment is being more prescriptive about, hey, if you want to exchange information in the afloat environment, this is what we need you to do to make it most efficient, to make it agile, and to make it secure. And we don't need you to be developing anymore these big monolithic applications where you want to come drop a server on us, you know what I mean, on the ship. And so I do believe that being more prescriptive and to some extent will be helpful. I mean, when you think about how Apple does the Apple Store, I mean, they just don't let everybody develop willy-nilly. I mean, they have some certain standards. And if you meet them, it goes through their automated testing and your apps get out there. We want to have that same kind of agility and the same kind of improvements in cybersecurity that you get with that kind of environment. However, we also don't want to make it so prescriptive that it inhibits innovation or inhibits the ability to build things in the way people need them to operate. So there's a fine line there, but I do believe that the environment does need to be more prescriptive than it is today.
Another thing that kept coming up at the West Conference in a panel of the CISCOM CIOs was that beyond the application issue, there's also just a network infrastructure here that's got to be dealt with, because NMCI, as it exists today, as it's architected today, really isn't optimized to work in a cloud environment where you need super high availability, you need really fat data pipes, you need the kind of resilience that's going to allow you to get to your data wherever it is if it's no longer hosted with you. So is there an explicit plan to tackle that problem, and do you have kind of an assessment of how big that problem is?
So I don't have an assessment of how big the problem is, but there will be the issue of concern of bottlenecks and things like that. Now, PEO EIS and the folks working the follow-on to the NMCI contract engine are looking at that. So when we have all of our data moved out to cloud, well, how much data is that, and what is that going to look like? So they're the ones that are working sort of any kind of modeling and simulation about how that would work in the future engine environment, because the current environment wasn't built for that kind of transport right now necessarily, although there's a very capable transport on NMCI. In some locations, it may not support that kind of volume. So we do need to take a look at, and as we migrate applications, will the environment of the folks who need to access it be able to do that from the existing infrastructure they have, or would they have to wait a little bit? And then in which case we would wait to move that application to a later date when the infrastructure is upgraded.
And you've hit on some of this already, but what's the Navy's big picture vision of what having a more cloud-centric environment gets you? I mean, it's probably cheaper to operate in the long run if everything goes well, but there seems to be quite a bit of agreement lately that cost really isn't the main point anymore, that there are more important reasons to go to the cloud. So what is that for you?
So for me, it's never been cost. I mean, I know that's heresy when you work in the Pentagon, right? But for me, it's been operations. So the operational benefit that I will get by having all my data in the cloud, where I can do a couple things. I can have the data analytics and the machine learning piece done in the cloud. I can apply, I can have all my authoritative databases in the cloud and have that information reused with using multiple web services, you know what I mean? So it can pull from the authoritative databases, which may be stovepiped or inaccessible today. I'll be able to observe what's going on with my data across the enterprise better. So from a cybersecurity perspective, I'll have better visibility on all those databases. And I'll be able to make sure that patches and cybersecurity improvements or when we have an adversary activity, that will have better SA than what I might have right now. And so I think there's a lot of operational advantages to do that, plus the ability to expose data to other people who may not even known it was even available. You know, and that's going to open up a whole host of possibilities about how you can combine data in ways that we don't do today, and have machines help us do that and find those data sources and the nuggets of how they can be combined. So I think from an operational perspective, it's going to absolutely give us an information advantage. From a cybersecurity perspective, I think it's going to be an improvement too, because again, you'll have better visibility on all those databases and what's going on with them than we might have today, you know, uniformly across the enterprise. And then I do think we will see financial benefits. Maybe not right now, as there's going to be an uptick in cost as you migrate to the cloud. And as we learn, you know, okay, what's the best contract? What's the best way to buy the services that we need? But again, competition within industry among the commercial cloud providers will also drive the cost down. So just like you saw with cable TV and stuff years ago, or cell phones and stuff, the service was hugely expensive, but it comes down when you have competition.
Is that another reason to disperse some of that contracting authority out to the SysCom, so that we're not relying on just one Navy-wide contract? Are there competitive reasons to do it that way too, or competition-promoting reasons?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that, because I would say that the enterprise broker, the executive agent role that Spayware is going to have, they will probably have more than one vendor that they work with, and that will spur competition. You know, just throughout DoD, you're not going to have just one vendor that does everything. You'll probably have multiple vendors that they can rely on to do, you know, to provide, because there may be certain things that are required in that enterprise contract that can't be sufficed with one. With one vendor. So I think that there's going to be opportunities for multiple vendors. However, what we don't want to see is multiple contracts with multiple vendors, right? That's why we want to have that enterprise vehicle that covers that for all the people who want those services. And again, exceptions to that, not using the enterprise contract, would be very limited exceptions to the rule. You really have to show why, you know, what's on the enterprise contract doesn't meet your requirements.
So if their authority to do new contracts is fairly limited and it's by exception, what's primarily their role in the brokerage arrangement if it's not mainly setting up new vehicles?
So a lot of what they have to do is, again, getting their applications ready for migrating to the cloud. It's going to be things like making sure that people are adhering to the configuration that their applications are supposed to have in the cloud, keeping metrics on how the information in that environment is behaving. They're going to have to make sure that there are baseline configurations maintained and things like that. So there's oversight responsibilities of how they behave in the cloud, the application owners and their data, that has to be managed. And that's almost too much for one organization to manage, i.e. PEO EIS, managing every single application that's out there. It's best to have the folks that are the functional area managers of those applications managing the execution of the cloud contract on their behalf. So it's not as important, honestly, for them to be the person who's writing the cloud contracts, because again, hopefully they're going to be using the enterprise contract, but then the execution of how those applications and information are behaving in the cloud, that's going to be where we rely on them to help out.
Rear Admiral Danielle Barrett is the Navy's Chief Information Officer. She joined us by phone from her office at the Pentagon to talk about the Navy's restructuring of its cloud brokerage arrangements and the service's broader approach to commercial cloud. That's going to do it for this week's Federal Insights. Thanks so much for joining us for our discussions on cloud computing in DoD all this month. For more, go to federalnewsradio.com and search DoD Cloud. I'm Jared Serbin. So long.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights DoD Cloud, sponsored by Microsoft, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search DoD Cloud. Here's Lee Madden, General Manager, U.S. Department of Defense at Microsoft.
Today, events move faster than ever. Our military forces need the edge only technology can deliver. Microsoft Azure is the U.S. government-exclusive cloud built for mission speed. Microsoft brings powerful capabilities like analytics and AI to help the DoD turn data into insights and take immediate action. Microsoft data centers provide world-class security for the military's vital resources from the Pentagon to the tactical edge.
Visit azure.com/missioncloud.